Exactly.
Wow, what a fascinating example of evolution in action.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Ian Matthews at St. Andrews University in Scotland. I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
WILL programs are made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center with fitness and wellness facilities, including Cardinal Fitness and Amara Yoga, opening soon.
In sports, congratulations to the Champaign Centennial Chargers. They advanced to the Class 3A Boys Championship game after scoring a 66-65 comeback win over Chicago North Lawndale in Peoria this afternoon. The Chargers will face the winner of this afternoon's game between Oswego and Chicago Leo. Tomorrow's championship game tips off at 12:45 p.m. in Peoria. In the NCAA men's tourney, we have a couple of final scores to pass along. Kansas defeated North Dakota State 84-74. It was Marquette 58 over Utah State. 58-57, the score there. The Chicago Blackhawks will try to sweep their season series with the Edmonton Oilers tonight at the United Center. And the St. Louis Blues road trip to Canada is not going well so far. Tonight, the Blues hope to salvage a win while looking to avoid an eighth straight road loss to the Calgary Flames. And Roy Oswalt will start for the United States in its semifinal against Japan in the World Baseball Classic. Manager Davey Johnson made the announcement today after the Americans worked out at Dodger Stadium. The U.S. plays its semifinal Sunday night with the winner advancing to Monday's championship game. That's sports. It's 2:42. Much of the bottled water that we drink comes from springs and aquifers in Florida. Water companies pay tiny one-time fees to pump it out. Now state officials want them to pay tax for every gallon they take. The new proposal has water bottlers boiling. From Miami, NPR's Greg Allen reports.
Each day, more than 5 million gallons are removed from Florida water sources and sold under a variety of names: Dasani, Deer Park, Zephyr Hills, Aquafina. There are at least 22 bottled water companies in Florida. For the right to bottle tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of gallons each day, the companies pay next to nothing. A one-time water use permit may run a couple hundred dollars. The administration of Florida Governor Charlie Crist now hopes to change that. Florida is considering imposing a severance fee on water bottlers. The state would charge companies a 6-cent tax on every gallon of water they draw. As you might imagine, water bottlers are not happy.
Because it's patently unfair.
Jim McClellan is a spokesman for Nestle, which in Florida bottles water under the Deer Park and Zephyr Hills brands. No one is suggesting that bottlers are somehow endangering Florida's springs. They take just a tiny fraction of the output. In all, McClellan says Nestle takes 1 million gallons a day from Florida. By way of comparison, that's about the amount used daily by 2 or 3 golf courses. And golf courses, farmers, and others who draw Florida water, he notes, would not pay the fee.
This tax would only apply to water bottlers. People who add high fructose corn syrup to the same water and sell it as a soft drink would not be subject to this tax. There's just no rationale behind it.
It's estimated that it could generate $56 million in revenue in the first year alone, money that would be reserved for water management projects. The head of Florida's Department of Environmental Protection, Mike Soule, says he doesn't believe the proposal unfairly targets water bottlers. One of the major differences, he says, is that water drawn by farmers, golf courses, and municipalities is discharged back into the aquifer.
In this case, water is actually shipped out of the state. We're not singling out water bottlers. We're merely acknowledging there is a different use of that water compared to other water users in the state of Florida.
Water bottlers say a severance fee would put Florida bottling plants at a competitive disadvantage. But it's an idea that's gaining ground nationally. Severance fees have been adopted by Michigan and Vermont and are being considered in Maine. Massachusetts is considering an outright ban on bottled water extractions. Eric Draper of Florida's Audubon Society says these kinds of fees are intended to reimburse Floridians for resources that are commercially exploited and from which they no longer benefit. The new proposal, he says, treats water like other natural resources. phosphate, for example, which is used for fertilizer.
At the time that the tax was put onto phosphate ore, the phosphate companies said we're being singled out. At the time that it was put on lime rock companies said we're being singled out. When it was put on oil and gas, they said we're singled out. Every time that someone is taxed for taking a public resource and then reselling it, yeah, they say they're being singled out.
So far, the idea to impose a per-gallon fee on water bottlers has not generated much enthusiasm in Florida's legislature. The proposal has yet to gain a sponsor. Making more progress is an alternate plan that would put the burden not on water bottlers, but on consumers, imposing a 6-cent tax on every bottle of water sold in Florida. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
The South by Southwest Music Festival has taken over the clubs, bars, and the streets of Austin, Texas. Tens of thousands of musicians and fans are there to have a good time listening to music. Organizers say there are more bands than ever in the festival's 23 years. There are panel discussions. One yesterday was called "There's Still Lots of Money in Songwriting and Music Publishing." NPR's Stephen Thompson was there and has this report.
No one needs to be reminded of the economy, certainly not in the music industry, which was collapsing before the stock market tanked. But here in Austin, wall-to-wall music fans seem to have turned a deaf ear to the lousy economy. It's even given some of them an excuse to visit South by Southwest.
Actually, if it weren't for the economy, we wouldn't be here.
Jacob Burlow came here from New York City, where he's a student at the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn.
The person who drove was an investment banker. He lost his job and decided to take the road trip that he always wanted to take.
This is Burlow's first time at South by Southwest. He's looking forward to hearing new music, and his odds are good. More than 1,800 bands are playing the festival this year.
That's what I'm looking forward to, Saturday night, finding my way to that one show that everybody's talking about that is, like, awesome, that, like, nobody's ever heard of this band, but everybody feels like they're experiencing, like, some moment in history where, like, this band played at South by Southwest this year, and the rest is history.
Those moments are still available to fans, but the days of music industry professionals coming here to bid on the next big thing are long gone. To improve their odds of getting heard by someone, musicians are playing as much as they can. Take the Meishi from L.A. Add up its appearances at evening showcases, private parties, and casual barbecues, and the group is performing at the festival 15 times in 4 days. Bill Gray plays bass in the Meishi. He says the band's busy performance schedule is a matter of survival.
Beer is really expensive after a bit, and if you play a lot, you get more beer and water and things you need to survive, pita bread, and that kind of thing. So it's like, if we're going to be here, we definitely don't want to spend any money, you know? Or you're not making any money at South by Southwest, you're kind of just doing it.
Members of the Meishi paid their own way to get here. They applied for and received a spot on an official festival showcase. The rest of the time, they're playing private parties. Bill Gray says the challenge is getting spotted in a sea of musicians.
So it's like, well, what can we do that would be weird? It's like, well, we could just play a ton, you know, and, like, see what happens and get that, like, the endorphins running and everything gets crazy and, like, feels cool, you know?
So if it takes playing 15 shows to attract attention and keep the band in beer, why not?
Also, I'm starting to teach guitar, if anybody out there. $15 an hour.
Of course, the Meishi played 18 shows last year. So at least one thing about South by Southwest has gotten smaller in 2009. Stephen Thompson, NPR News, Austin, Texas.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Parkland College, with some other community partners, is embarked on an effort to bridge the digital divide. Faculty members, with the help of students, community organizations, and a state grant, are getting computers into the hands of those who have faced barriers in gaining access to computers. Training is also part of the program. It's a boon for the community, and it makes sense environmentally. Brian Bell is one of the people behind the initiative. He's a part-time faculty member in the Computer Science and Information Technology Department at Parkland College in Champaign, and I'm pleased that he's here with me in the studio this afternoon. How big is the digital divide in Champaign-Urbana?
How big? From what I've experienced being down here in my 2 years, I would say it was pretty huge. The high school students that I see coming in as freshmen at Parkland, their ability to navigate themselves around the computers, as well, compared to some of their other peers, you can see that there is a gap. The IT information technology is not available to them at younger ages, from middle school up to high school. They may have an experience in high school, but it's they're still lagging behind.
Okay, so there is a need.
Yes, there's a need.
Very definitely. Okay, so this got underway about a year ago?
A year ago, Parkland College and the Urban League worked together to write a grant from the State Department of Economic the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Let me get that right. They wrote the grant last summer. They were approved around the fall time. Parkland College, took the state funds and, created a new computer lab at the Urban League. And then the Urban League slowly started to kind of dissolve.
Wind down.
And then we then moved the new computer lab over to our Parkland on Mattis building.
Okay. So where do things stand now? Is the lab open?
Well, once the Urban League closed, then there was a delay on moving the funds and actually legally moving the grant over to Parkland. Mm-hmm. So we were just awarded the funds like a week ago.
Yeah.
So but the lab was up and running, soon after they closed, but there was no funds to continue the workshops. So the workshops will begin soon after spring break.
Okay. So where does the equipment come from?
The equipment was bought with the grant funds. There was money in the grant for funds and instruction.
And I understand that also computers are being donated, gently used computers from the University of Illinois, from the cities, and so on and so forth.
Gently used? Yeah.
Maybe.
They're gently used.
You don't want something that's ancient.
Yeah.
Right?
Right now, I've been fortunate enough to work with the city of Champaign, the library, the new library, the city of Champaign, and Willis Computing. They've donate their gently used computers to me. Otherwise, I guess they would be sitting somewhere. They're in a warehouse. Because once they refurbish their labs or their computer equipment, these computers may sit somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I've been fortunate enough to have contacts there. They donate the computers to me. I kind of repair them and put operating systems on them and identify organizations, not-for-profit, low-income organizations that would benefit from having these computers. And the operating systems are specifically geared towards smaller kids. So I'm trying to expose smaller kids to computer technology.
Okay, and do these computers then go into schools or do they go into homes, both?
Let's see. I've been working with churches.
Boys and Girls Club?
The Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. That was a good match. We know they have kids.
Yeah.
It's a captive audience between 2 to 5. We know they're there. We know they're being supervised by adults. And then all I needed was a place. And they, at that time, happened to have a room available for me to, build them a lab. So it's just a small. It was 6 computers, nothing big. But it was a benefit for the smaller kids.
Yeah. And have you been hands-on with those kids?
Me personally. Uh-huh. I'm just getting the computers in the hands of people who are in need. The instructional side is from the digital divide side, and that's at Parkland on Mattis.
Okay. Well, tell us about that side of it, the digital divide trainers.
Digital divide training. Let's see. The bridging the IT gap from the underrepresented and low-income people, I guess in Champaign County, we can almost say.
Mm-hmm.
The lab has 2 functions. One is an open lab. Open lab, similar to a library, but with instruction. There's someone there who will assist you with the resume. There's someone there who will assist you with your homework. There's someone there who will assist you with job hunting, or if you have computer problems yourself. Myself or Ken Turner, my partner, we're there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
The second component of the digital divide are the instructional workshops, which there are structured classes, 4 to 8 week workshops, and it's computer maintenance and hardware classes. And it's free and open to the public.
Okay.
And it's open and open entry, open exit. So you can sign up for the class and just come as you will. Come as you want, and registration is open.
Okay. And when are the hours for just kind of dropping in for sort of a, like, a, for lack of a better word, this kind of a clinic? Help me with my resume.
That will be on Fridays.
Okay.
That will be from 10 to 5 on Fridays. It's not open yet. Like I said, we just got the grant transferred to us. We're trying to reorganize everything because we had it ready to rock and roll, but then there was some...
A wrinkle came along.
A little wrinkle came along. So we paused everything, and now we're getting our ducks in order to start the open lab and the free workshops. And that will be up and running after Parkland spring break, which is the 23rd to the 27th.
Okay.
So by the 29th, around April 1st,
April.
We'll be ready. Yeah.
Okay, so later this spring.
Mm-hmm.
Anything out on the horizon as far as the future is concerned? Yeah. Looking at what else you'd like to do?
Well, I like to expand on having organizations to, if they have computers that are, not too old, gently used, they can, contact me at Parkland. I will, if they're in a, it's also green, we're recycling computers. It helps the environment. So monitors, keyboards, mice, computers, donate them to me. I can fix them up. With the help of Parkland's students, I like to, give a thanks out to Sean Monty's, his Linux students. They helped me build 20 computers at once.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very difficult for me to do by myself. I have student volunteers. His name is James. He's very nice. I'd also like to thank Maria Mobasri, the department chair. Without her, she makes the funds come in to, help the,
that's very important.
Help the ball keep rolling.
Yeah. Are there opportunities for people who might be listening to us this afternoon who have expertise in computers who aren't currently affiliated with Parkland to lend a hand?
Sure. They can contact me at my email address is bbell@parkland.edu, and my office phone number is 373-3872.
Okay.
And they can contact me. They can I can always use volunteers. I can always use computers, fix them up, and give them away to needy people.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for telling us about the program.